Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy speculation and advice. Now, along with the guys from Fanball.com, here's the host for Fantasy Football Weekly, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to America's longest-running fantasy football show. It is called Fantasy Football Weekly. I'm your host, Paul Charchian from Fanball.com. My co-hosts today, Brian Johnson and Matt Harrison. Hey, boys.
Hello, friends.
Mellow greetings, Paul Charchian.
Mellow greetings. Well, isn't that nice? Are you drinking Mellow Yellow? Is that...
It is a yellow container.
But it is not Mellow Yellow.
It is not mellow at all. It's Red Bull Yellow Edition.
You guys are giving away to us free advertising here.
No kidding.
Jeez.
We've got a lot, especially when we've got so much to get to over
That's
the course
true.
Of this
what
show.
Are we doing?
We will break down every single matchup fantasy style with letter grades on every player who matters. We will give you our rationale for all of those grades so you get to decide if you agree with our decisions or not. We'll answer three tough questions. We'll give you nine players upon whom you can take a chance. And we will jump into our time machine and give you the player that everybody's going to be looking for next week on the waiver wire, but you'll already have them because it's this week, and you heard the segment we like to call premature speculation.
I expect that peacock for my Jacob Hollister pre-spec a couple weeks ago. It's going to go down in the pre-spec Hall of Fame. And he still hasn't even had Arizona yet, week 16, baby.
I know. Isn't that going to be nice? I'm a little carried away on the button bar.
Wait, that's fine.
Mitch Trubisky's playing in Arizona?
Happy trombone. Yeah, you can be happy about a lot of things, not just Mitch Trubisky and his three-touchdown game.
We'll pull up a happy trombone ski later in the show.
All right, I'm looking forward to that. We've got plenty of matchups to get to, all of them, beginning with not Thursday nights. Buffalo at Miami. Brian, you know, for Buffalo, this has been the end of a series of strongly positive matchups. This is the last one, and in honesty, the Bills have not maximized this opportunity against most of these bad opponents. What do you think happens in this game in Miami?
I think they probably win. Well, but let's analyze this from a fantasy perspective.
Right.
Okay, just kidding. Devin Singletary, start with him. Going to give him a B. Over the last 2 weeks, Singletary has totaled 34 touches to Frank Gore's 17.
Mm-hmm.
The Dolphins are conceding 32 touches per game to opposing backs. So if this trend continues, Singletary should touch the ball around, let's say, 23 times, my guesstimation.
That would be plenty.
Which means Frank Gore would handle the ball around 9 times.
Mm-hmm.
Nine times?
Thanks for the manual.
Nine times.
Good job.
By the way, these teams played already this season. This is the second meeting of the year. Singletary and Gore combined for 18 carries, 81 yards, and zero rushing touchdowns in the first meeting. Frank Gore had the only reception, but Singletary is the bell cow now, it appears, so he gets the B.
Mm-hmm.
So does John Brown in the passing game, at least 4 catches and 50 yards in 7 straight games. So Smokey has a safe floor we're not used to seeing. He's usually been very boom or bust.
Wait. Is he Smokey or is he Smoke?
I thought it was Smokey Brown.
Is he John Smokey Brown?
I believe so.
That's Smokey the Bear. I think he's
Maybe
Smoke.
That's
Isn't he just Smoke?
I thought it was Smokey. Well, we'll have to fact check this
Not
during
Fred
the break.
Smoot. That's different. Yeah, we'll get back to you on that.
I'm calling him
this
Smokey.
This is very important.
But this is a high ceiling scenario for Smoke or Smokey, whichever one it is. We'll figure it out.
Don't give him an E grade.
Brown had 5 for 83 and a touchdown in the first meeting, and that was when Xavien Howard was healthy, their best cornerback. He's on IR now, so I'm liking the ceiling for Brown here. I'm going to actually give him an A. Screw it. A for John Brown. C for Cole Beasley. Beasley also scored in the first meeting, but only had 3 catches for 16 yards. But Miami allowed at least 80 yards and a touchdown to slot receivers Juju Smith-Schuster and Jameson Crowder in the recent games since the first meeting. So Beasley is worth a dart throw in PPR.
Mm-hmm.
Buffalo tight ends are not, though. They're all on the bench for me. And Josh Allen's not on the bench. I'm going to give him an A. Just a modest 202 and 2 touchdowns passing and 432. That's good passing. 432 rushing. We're used to seeing the...
Yeah, I want the 11 scrambles for 96 yards from Josh Allen, and we're not getting it all year.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll see it in this game, because last year he had 95 yards rushing and 2 touchdowns, then 135 yards rushing in the other game, so
we'll
that ceiling still exists. Miami has actually opposed limited opposing quarterback production over the last three, but they faced Mason Rudolph, Sam Darnold, and Brian Hoyer during that stretch, so like Josh Allen here. Over to the Miami side.
Before we have breaking news, before you get over to the Miami side.
Okay.
It's Smokey.
I did it.
I don't know what made me think it was Smoke, but I and by the way, some people do call him Smoke, and it turns out there's a restaurant in Kansas City called the John Brown Smoke House.
All right.
And according to Yelp, it's delicious.
I don't think that's in...
No, I don't think that they have anything to do with each other.
No, oh, wait. No. It's in Long Island. Sorry. It's in Long Island, I guess, but they call themselves a Kansas City style of barbecue. If any listener has ever been to the John Brown Smokehouse, let us know.
People in KC like us.
Which Miami cornerback is going to the John Brown Smokehouse this weekend?
Oh, I like it.
Hey.
Not Xavier Howard or Aqib Talib.
He's dead
or
to
basically
or
anyone that should be in the post.
Vic Fitzpatrick.
All right. I was trying to get to how bad Kalen Ballage sucks, okay? But I'm going to give him a C in this matchup.
Oh, God. Wow.
55 carries on the season for Ballage, by the way. 113 yards on those 55 carries.
Unbelievably bad.
He called his 45 combo yards on 22 touches against the Colts last week a, quote, okay day, quote unquote, okay day for
or Caleb career Lodge. Day.
But I don't know. In the first meeting, Miami backs totaled 94 yards and a touchdown on 23 carries. But when I say Miami backs, I really mean Mark Walton and Kenyon Drake. Ballage had three carries for 7 yards. He is the one who scored the touchdown. The Bills have allowed 4 running back rushing touchdowns over the last 4 games. Nick Chubb and Adrian Peterson both topped 100 yards against Buffalo in the last 2 weeks, and neither had more than 20 carries to do so. So I'll give Ballage the C based on volume. But again, he blows. Devontae Parker, he's on the bench, had 5 for 55 and 1 in the first meeting. He had 5 for 55 and 1 in the first meeting. And in his first game without Preston Williams last week, he saw 10 targets. But Preston Williams was shadowed by Tredavious White in the first meeting. Devontae Parker is going to be shadowed by Tredavious White.
So
he's on the bench.
That's right.
Alan Hearns, I'm going to make up my mind on the fly here. Played 90% of the snaps last week. He won't be shadowed by Tredavious White.
Mm-hmm.
White locked down Beckham last week, and that's when Jarvis Landry went off, and Rashard Higgins even scored. So Alan Hearns?
Man, that's a deep dart throw.
How about a cheap dart throw on fanball.com?
That's a basically free
dart. He's not a Taycom receiver, but a dart throw on fanball.
Right.
Mike Gesicki, going to give him a C. Not one opposing tight end has top 50 yards against Buffalo, and that includes Gesicki.
So why does he get a C?
Because he had 4 for 41 in the first meeting, and sadly, that's decent tight end production these days to get about 8 PPR points. So he's a round tight end 15 this week. And I'm putting your boy Stu Beard on the bench, Charge. Mm-hmm. He did have 282 and 1 passing and 13 rushing yards and a rushing touchdown in the first meeting, but I'm not banking on that rushing touchdown. The Bills have allowed 1 or 0 touchdown passes until Baker threw for 2 last week. But is Patrick as good as Baker? Who knows? They're both not very good. So bench for Fitz.
You be nice.
Okay.
Denver takes on the Minnesota Vikings in Minnesota. For Denver, it's a game where Brandon Allen, former AAF quarterback, gets his second NFL start ever, and it's on the road, and it's against Mike Zimmer. So it puts a damper on everything here. This feels like a sizable mismatch. I could see him finding his way to like a touchdown, maybe in garbage time, maybe he gets a second in garbage time, something like that. But other than that, I don't think you want to start Brandon Allen, and that brings down quite a bit the other players in the passing game. Cortland Sutton remains a B-level grade, though, because Vikings cornerback Xavier Rhodes, as he likes to be called now, it's just been a bad year. The catch rate on him is 86%. That's crazy. The passer rating against him is 121. Cortland Sutton is just super safe as well, averaging 74 yards over his last 6 games, 4 touchdowns over those 6 games, most of those with Joe Flacco. And again, I don't trust Brandon Allen to get a lot done here, but that might be enough to get Cortland Sutton up to a B grade, but he's the only receiver you'll want to start in this game. Noah Fant gets a wobbly C, mostly just because of the bye week and the injuries to Kittle and Hooper. So normally I'd give him a bench, but I'm going to give him a C for Noah Fant. He has seen 17 targets the last 3 games, a notable uptick for the rookie tight end in usage. Vikings allow the 3rd most tight end receptions, although none have scored. Philip Lindsay, you guys know I love Philip Lindsay. The Vikings do not have their primary run stuffer, Linval Joseph, for this game. But even so, it's a tough matchup. Vikings shut down Ezekiel Elliott without Linval Joseph last week. Vikings ranked 9th in rushing yards allowed. They've given up 1 rushing touchdown since week 2. I've got a C grade on Philip Lindsay. Royce Freeman is on the bench. He has topped 40 yards once in his last 5 games. He's been held to under 3.5 yards per carry for a month straight. He doesn't catch passes either. He's dead to us. For that matter, when is Denver and Vic Fangio, who I love, going to just let Philip Lindsay be a workhorse and see what happens? You know, what happens if you give him the ball 25 times? He's not going to snap in half. He broke his wrist in week 16 last year. That doesn't mean he's fragile.
Why put the unnecessary hits on him, though, in a lost season at this point?
I guess
you
could say that, I suppose. Let's go to the Viking side. The storyline here is really that Vic Fangio has migrated his Chicago defense westward. They are awesome. In fact, statistically, since week 4, the Broncos are the better defense than the Bears. Let's talk about it. Dalvin Cook. I've just got a B grade on Dalvin Cook. Only two backs have averaged 4 yards per carry against Denver. The Broncos have given up just one rushing score to running backs in their last 6 games, only one receiving score to backs all year long. Cook is averaging 5 catches and 68 yards through the air in his last 3 games, and the screen pass has become devastating. And I love that part about the game for Dalvin Cook. He's now become a very valuable receiver. But I think Fangio's defense is good enough to keep him at a B level for this game. Kirk Cousins gets a C grade, and it's a wobbly C at that. The past 5 teams to face the Broncos have averaged just 217 passing yards and 0.4 touchdowns. That's it. You know, Kirk's got to do a whole lot better than that if you're going to even consider starting him here. He's further challenged by the absence of Adam Thielen in this game. Stephon Diggs will draw shadow coverage from elite cornerback Chris Harris, who's giving up just 39 yards per game in his coverage. And that's why I've got Diggs with a bench grade.
Ooh.
Last 2 games without Adam Thielen, Diggs just 4 catches for 54 yards. That is it. I mentioned Chris Harris giving up just 39 yards per game in his coverage. So it's a brutal matchup for Diggs as well. Kyle Rudolph is on fire with 4 touchdowns in the last 4 weeks, but the Broncos are tough against tight ends. Denver's only surrendered 1 score to the position. They held Travis Kelce and Darren Waller to under 5 receptions each. So I've got a bench grade on him as well. Overall, it feels like a defensive tussle. I don't particularly like any of the players involved.
A tussle.
Tussle. Let's go to the Saints, who found themselves in a bit of a tussle last week, unexpectedly.
Yeah.
Nobody thought that the Falcons would shut out Drew Brees. And they take on Tampa Bay. It's not no chance that Drew Brees goes 0-0 against the Falcons and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But it is worth noting, in his last 5 trips to Tampa, Brees has only had 1 game with multiple scores and only 1 game of over 300 yards in his last 5 visits to Tampa Bay.
All right.
But I'm giving him an A grade.
Yeah, I would too.
We all know the Tampa defense is non-existent, allowing multiple scores to the past 7 quarterbacks they've faced, including 4 touchdowns to Teddy Bridgewater in week 5. Michael Thomas, easy A, had 11 for 182 and 2 in the first meeting. Ted Ginn even gets a C grade in this one.
Yeah,
he scored in the first meeting, too.
I tried that last week, and it gave me 0-0 reception.
Yeah, I think we were all skunked last week in that Atlanta game. Tampa stops no one. 5 different wide receivers have topped 70 yards in the last 2 weeks, and they're so bad that they just cut former first-rounder Vernon Hargraves III. Yeah, he's gone.
Yeah.
Jared Cook is getting a B grade. 8 different tight ends have either topped 50 yards or scored against the Bucs this year. That's 1 per game on the scores. Cook was targeted 10 times last week against Atlanta. That was the first game that Cook played with Drew Brees since week 2.
Wow.
So That's a pretty good target share right there after Michael Thomas.
I like him a lot this week.
And then Alvin Kamara and Latavius Murray. Hmm. I'm giving Kamara a B and Latavius a pretty solid bench grade. Behind most of the week last week to Atlanta, Kamara ran 45 pass routes and was on the field for 79% of the snaps, had 10 targets in that game. Murray is basically only in play if this game gets out of hand in the Saints' favor. And if you believe they're about to dominate, I guess you could fire him up. But even if he gets in the game, the Bucs have allowed the fewest rushing yards per game in the league this season. They're really good. And New Orleans is 3-2 in their last 5 trips to Tampa.
Yeah.
They've only won by more than a touchdown once in that span. So this game's not going to be a blowout if history serves right. On the other side, Ronald Jones and Peyton Barber, they're both on the bench. They're back to splitting the rushing touches almost evenly. In fact, they each had 11 rushing touches last week. But Jones did add 8 catches for 77 yards through the air. So if you're going to start one of them, it's probably Ronald Jones. But the last back to score against the Saints was Peyton Barber back in week five. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been
like 6 weeks. So they're both on the bench. Jameis Winston, I'm giving him a B grade. Winston has topped 300 yards in six of his last seven starts.
He's been great for fantasy use.
Really has. The one outlier here was the game against the Saints, who held him to 204 yards and two scores. Although, Marshawn Lattimore is expected to miss this game with a hamstring injury.
They ruled him out. He is going to miss it. Yes.
That really helps Winston's chances. And as Lattimore has shut down Mike Evans in the past few weeks, that really helps Mike Evans. Because speaking of Evans, remember when he had zero catches in the week five meeting going up against Lattimore?
Yeah.
Well, Lattimore shadowed him the entire game. Since he's gone, it's open season for Evans. He gets the A grade since he topped 80 yards or scored in six of his last seven games. Oh, that seventh one was against Lattimore.
Right.
Godwin is getting a B grade. It looks like he'll be facing slot corner P.J. Williams, who's allowed 8.5 yards per attempt this year. Godwin hasn't scored in four straight weeks, but he has averaged 10 targets per game during that span, and he's also managed 125 yards and two scores in the first meeting.
There's some talk that they'll move P.J. Williams outside to take on Evans, and that they
Chauncey
might do that.
Gardner.
Yeah, Chauncey Gardner Billups the fourth would end up doing
Absolutely a disaster, too, in coverage this year in a short spurt. So it's all looking good for Godwin. O.J. Howard is getting a C grade. Cameron Brate's on the bench. Brate has seen fewer than 15 snaps in two consecutive games. And Howard was on the field for 99% of the snaps last week. And he scored against the terrible Cards tight end defense. The Saints aren't yielding a lot to the position, but with Howard on the field for 99% of the snaps and a lot of people having issues with tight end, he's probably good enough to start in some scenarios.
Wasn't Chauncey Gardner the name of the Peter Sellers character in some 1970s movie where everybody thought that he was like a
Charch, I was born in the 80s.
Brilliant artist.
So is Brian.
Turns out that he was really just super stupid. I swear Chauncey Gardner was that guy.
I just think Chauncey Billups.
Chauncey Gardner Billups. I like that part of it. We'll go with that. Yeah, it's something like that. It wasn't okay. Breanne is younger than all of us, and Breanne is confirmed. Chauncey Gardner was the name of some of this.
I'm pretty sure behind
character.
The glass, Breanne just dabbed there too.
Yeah, so.
It was a hard dab.
Hard dab, because we don't soft dab on this show. Nothing but the firmest of dabs.
She's got dabbing fever.
I don't even know what that means, but I like the sound of it.
I like it.
Everything Charch available at fanball.com by going to fanball.com/charch. That is me. You get instant access to my free weekly rankings, my free $1,000 weekly contest, which this week is a super flex contest. Get Jameis Winston in your lineups. I'll tell you that much. You get instant access. I mentioned my free rankings, our podcast, all kinds of good stuff. Fanball.com/charch. Coming up next, it's a segment we call Take a Chance on Me. Nine players who you would not normally start, many of whom are available on the waiver wire. We'll tell you who they are when we come back to Fantasy Football Weekly. Three doofuses here to try to help you find nine doofuses. I am Doofy number one, Paul Charchian. You can find me on Twitter at Paul Charchian. I'm with Matt Harrison, that is at Explosive Output, and Brian Johnson at BTXJ. Nine players not normally in your lineups, many of whom are available on the waiver wire. Take a chance on me. We begin at the quarterback position. Brian, who you got?
I'm getting grimy today, and we're starting with Cincy's Ryan Finley at the Raiders. Finley, likely not really good, but it's okay. He had 1.5 touchdowns against Baltimore last week. I'm giving him a half touchdown on the 22 rushing yards he had. That's about 2 points, so 1.5.
Okay.
This is a much better matchup for Finley, though. Oakland is top 8 in opponent passing play percentage at home, and Cincy has the highest passing play percentage on the road, passing the ball 73% of the time on the road. Oakland's secondary has been in shambles all season. Now starting corner Trayvon Mullen, very questionable. Starting free safety LaMarcus Joyner is doubtful to play. And this game has the third highest over-under of the weekend. And there's going to be precious garbage time, and I'm not done pimping the Bengals yet.
Oh, all right. So that's just the beginning of your Bengal pimping.
The madness has just begun.
Popping the Bengal pimping. pimples. That's what I think. That's what it sounded like to me. I hear what I want to hear, I guess. Let's go to your quarterback.
What is with you today?
I think I'm in rare form. I think I'm over-caffeinated.
I would not recommend trying to pop a Bengals pimple, either a player or the animal.
No,
they're going to hurt you both.
Correct. Certainly not Myles Garrett.
I've got a guy who's probably on most rosters, but he's probably sitting on the bench in most leagues, and that's Kyler Murray. You might see Murray going up against that big red number one defense this week and be poised to put him on your bench, but not so fast. Murray has multiple touchdown passes in three of his last five games. He offers a nice rushing floor of about 35 yards per game, which is what he's averaging over the last few weeks. That's similar to about a touchdown pass in most league formats. Plus, he played these Niners 2 weeks ago. He stuck with them. They only lost by three. He came up with 241 yards and two scores with 34 yards on the ground. The Niners have been good against the quarterbacks they faced, which includes such stalwarts as Andy Dalton, Mason Rudolph, Baker Mayfield, Jared Goff, Case Keenum, and Kyle Allen. Yeah, I'm including Jared Goff in there. Well, these are bad quarterbacks.
Well, is Kyler Murray not in that group?
No, because he's Kyler Murray. He's good. The Niners have lost two key defensive pieces in the last 2 weeks to injury as pass rusher. Ronald Blair and linebacker Quan Alexander both hit IR. So I like Kyler Murray. Sneaky spot here.
That would be sneaky. You know who's a good quarterback?
Nope.
Kyle Allen is a good quarterback.
He is.
Yeah, he's coming off his best game as a pro. I'm watching that game going, you know what? This kid can play.
I just had him in the list of bad quarterbacks.
He's a good quarterback. He really can. He's got it. Whatever it is that a quarterback has to have, that intangible thing, Kyle Allen's got some of it. I don't know that he's loaded with talent.
Moxie.
He's got moxie. Chutzpah. You know what he's got? Kyle Allen's got chutzpah. He's also facing the Falcons, which helps a lot. You don't have to be that good. Now, I know they just shut out Drew Brees, but let's take a longer view of the Falcons. Prior to that, six straight games with multiple touchdowns. They're going to give up multiple touchdowns here, included in that group of multiple touchdown games. Alleged great quarterback, Kyler Murray, Jared Goff, Jacoby Brissett, and Marcus Mariota, since benched.
Alleged.
Kyle Allen might take a chance on me quarterback. Let's go to the running back position, Brian.
Back to the Bengals and Gio Bernard at the same Raiders. Gio was working his way into essentially a timeshare when it comes to snaps with Joe Mixon, but he left last week's game against Baltimore with an injury. Not listed on the injury report this week, so Gio will be back in action against the Raiders, who over their last six games have conceded six receptions per game to opposing running backs, who have also totaled five receiving touchdowns during that same span. So Gio Bernard, another Bengal who's going to mop up in garbage time.
All right.
I got Raheem Mostert. Matt Breida looks like he's missing this game with an ankle injury. Breida did lead the San Francisco running backs in touches last week. Mostert had seven during that game, actually.
Mm.
He should fill into Breida's spot, as the Niners have done before when an injury occurs in their backfield. They just kind of slide the next guy in, and he takes over the touches. Well, since Tevin Coleman returned, Breida's averaging 13.5 touches per game. So I'd put Mostert on something close to maybe 15 touches in this game.
Could be. Now, he's also, you know, he may be shaping up as a game time decision, and then you could pivot to Jeff Wilson because it is next. Next man up.
It is next man up. Zona's allowed five touchdowns to the position in the last four games, have given up 27 receptions to the position in the last three.
I can't believe you just Mostert baited on air.
I can't believe you squeezed all the pus out of the Bengals, or so we think.
Yeah, I didn't know Bengals had.
I can't remember the last time I had to take a chance on me running back inside my top 10 at the position, but I do this week. Brian Hill, starting running back, Atlanta Falcons, going up against Carolina, probably the worst running back defense in the league. Now, you need to know, Devonta Freeman's out, Ito Smith's on IR. Brian Hill got 20 carries in relief last week. 20. They have no problem giving him the ball a lot, and Carolina, over the past four games, has given up 12 running back touchdowns. That's a full season for many teams in the NFL. Panthers have done that in the last month. The last six runners to face Carolina have averaged at least 4.7 yards per carry on the ground, excepting Peyton Barber.
You'd think they'd be good, like, having to, like, go up against Christian McCaffrey in practice every day.
I was going
to
say the same thing.
It doesn't work that way, does it?
No.
Brian Hill might take a chance on me running back. Brian Johnson, let's go to the receiver position. Who you got?
Is this the first time in the history of the show that we're going full on stack?
I think it's
take a chance on me.
I think it's the first time somebody's been so lazy that they did not they pulled all three guys out of the same team.
Listen, you daily players, go over to fanball.com. I got your basement value garbage time stack here, and it's finishing off with Auden Tate of the Bengals, of course, at the Raiders. No way AJ Green's playing this week, so Tate remains in the starting lineup. And since week three, when Tate became a starter, he is 13th among all wide receivers in targets and top 25 in yards. And the Raiders' secondary is absolute trash. Outside of the two injuries I mentioned earlier, they've lost players to IR. They traded their best quarterback, Garion Connolly. So Auden Tate completes the Bengals stack for me.
Okay.
Heaven help me.
Matt. You take a chance on me, receiver. Yes.
I've got Randall Cobb. Cobb has been targeted 8 times and caught 6 balls in each of the last 2 weeks. Last week, he led the Cowboys with 106 yards and a score. Mm-hmm. This week, he faces a terrible Detroit defense that has been roasted by slot receivers as of recent. They gave up touchdowns in each of the last 2 weeks to Taylor Gabriel and Hunter Renfrow. They gave up 8 catches for 85 yards to Golden Tate the week before, and 2 touchdowns to the combo of Adam Thielen and B.C. Johnson the week before that. Randall Cobb.
I've got Curtis Samuel. Normally, I don't go with somebody who's so well rostered. He's 70% rostered. Okay. But Curtis Samuel's got the Falcons. I already told you I like Kyle Allen. He actually leads the Panthers in red zone targets from Kyle Allen. He's had 8 of them so far. Turned half of those into touchdowns. He faces a Falcons secondary that, over the last 3 games, has allowed 170 yards per game to receivers and has allowed 100-yard receiving performances in back-to-back games. Curtis Samuel, absolutely startable for fantasy owners. Let's see if we can sneak in one more matchup. Brian, we've already mined in many ways this Atlanta-Carolina matchup with some of the players I've already talked about here, because all three of mine came out of the same game. Two on the Carolina side, one on the Atlanta side. I already told people about Brian Hill. Tell people about the Falcons passing attack against Carolina, where it's a lot trickier.
Well, it's very tricky if Matt Ryan doesn't play with this ankle injury, but I'm going to assume he's playing. We'll go forward with he'll play. So I'm going to give Ryan a B. Has topped 300 yards and or thrown multiple touchdowns in 7 straight games against the Panthers. The Panthers haven't allowed more than 2 passing touchdowns to a single quarterback all year, and they just blanked Aaron Rodgers without their best corner, James Bradbury, last week. So I'm a little worried about Ryan re-injures the ankle. It's a bad matchup. No Austin Hooper.
Counts. Austin Hooper's just visited.
He's out, so yeah. So Matt Ryan, I'll give him a very soft B here. Julio Jones, I'll give him an A. I'm almost leaning B here. Julio has had some monster games against the Panthers in the past, but he hasn't topped 100 yards against them since November of 2017. Only totaled 9 catches for 92 yards in the 2 games against them last year. He did score a touchdown in the later game.
But what about this part? If Hooper's out, and Hooper's been siphoning off all the touchdowns, and here, yeah, Julio hasn't scored in, I don't know, forever.
Oh, no. It's certainly, yeah, the absence of Hooper and Devontae Freeman, too, by the way, opens up 30% of Atlanta's target share. So
yeah,
certainly bodes well for Julio.
And don't you think Ridley, too?
Yeah, definitely Ridley. Dante Jackson, questionable with a hip injury. Bradbury might come back. He's the better corner. Hmm. But if Jackson doesn't play, that bodes well for both. So I'm giving Julio the A, and I'll give Ridley a B. He scored in both meetings with Carolina last season. The Panthers are allowing more than 200 yards per game to wide receivers over the last 5 weeks. Mentioned Austin Hooper is out for about a month, which really sucks. I'm not going by way of Luke Stocker, though, but he's the next guy up. But deep tight end leagues, I guess go grab Stocker if you really need to.
Let's not do that.
And Brian Hill, your take a chance on me running back chart. On the Carolina side, I think I'll take a chance on Christian McCaffrey in this one. Surprisingly, only 1 touchdown in 4 games against Atlanta, and it came in their first meeting. But last year, he had combo yard totals of 178 and 139, and those came on 12 and 14 catch performances.
Jeez.
So, yeah, you're playing McCaffrey. You're definitely playing DJ Moore, too. He and Kyle Allen are really starting to click. Double-digit targets in back-to-back games, and Atlanta has allowed a 100-yard receiver in back-to-back games. So, big day for my boy DJ Moore in this one. Could be a big day for Curtis Samuel as well. Chargers take a chance on me, wide receiver.
Yeah.
Maybe even a big day for Greg Olsen. Shockingly, just 1 touchdown in his last 7 games against Atlanta. But that's kind of ancient history because he didn't play last year, I'm not too concerned about that. And tight end is such a wasteland that Olsen is certainly viable coming off a big game in Green Bay last week. Atlanta has given up 4 tight end touchdowns over their last 5 games, and an opposing lone tight end has seen 10 targets in 2 of the Falcons' last 3, so tight ends are involved. And then Kyle Allen, who is...
I take a chance on me quarterback.
Charges take a chance on me quarterback.
I think
so I stacked Bengals, you game stacked...
Well,
Taycom. No, I did.
You know, at least I took two of my 3 guys were... Yeah. Only 2 of my 3 were from the same. They're all from the same game.
So, but I would go Fanball and Superflex, Kyle Allen and Ryan Finley, and then throw in all the Bengals.
Why can't I play Daily Fantasy Auctions?
You can do that, too. Well, you do both.
You love auctioning in the preseason. Why wouldn't you love auctioning for this weekend's games? The Fanball Auctions, fast-paced, frantic, incredibly fun as you bid on 4 players simultaneously against your opponents. And you might even win a little bit of money while you're having all that fun. Fanball Auctions coming up next on Fantasy Football Weekly. We will break down more matchups, including Jacksonville at Indianapolis. The return of Nick Foles will tell you what to expect when we return to Fantasy Football Weekly. Football Weekly. I'm Paul Charchin. My co-hosts are Brian Johnson and Matt Harrison from Fanball.com. You can hear us over the air in many stations around the country. And this show is also a podcast available every Friday on every major podcasting platform, including the number one destination for podcasts, iHeartRadio. Jacksonville takes on Indianapolis. Nick Foles back under center. It's been every quarter since quarter one of the regular season since we've seen Nick Foles. Over the past 5 weeks, the Colts ranked number 1 in passing touchdowns allowed and number 6 in passing yards allowed. Nick Foles comes in rusty, having missed 10 weeks. So we'll roll all that together, and we're going to bench Nick Foles, and that means that I'm not crazy about any of his receivers. The only one I'll bother to talk about here is DJ Chark, who gets a cautious C grade. He's looked lost in the last 4 games, scoring just once and topping 53 yards just one time. Remember how good things were rolling for DJ Chark for a long time?
That was with Minshew, though, and Foles was always talked about in the preseason. I remember the preseason shows, how we were saying Foles really likes to target the slot, and D.D. Westbrook is set for a huge year.
Yeah,
I'm really interested in D.D. Westbrook as a long-term pickup. The rest of their schedule is great, by the way.
Yeah, after this week, the Colts secondary has been great, yielding just 1 score to opposing receivers in their last 4 games, tied for the fewest over that last month, and they've been doing so impressively without probably their best corner, Pierre Desir, who will likely miss this game as well. Apparently, they don't need him. Remember, by the way, in that quarter of play that Foles had, touchdown to DJ Chark. The only other Jaguar you likely care about is Leo Fournette, and he gets a B grade. Indy has not allowed a 100-yard rusher all season, and they're allowing the 7th fewest rushing yards per game over the last 5 weeks. Fournette has only played 2 games against the Colts in his career and was held under 3 yards per carry in both outings, but did manage to score in both, which is sort of the flip of this year, where he's getting a lot of yardage but not a lot of touchdowns. I think one way or another, he cobbles his way to a B-worthy grade. Let's flip over to the Colts side, where we get Jacoby Brissett back, which is great. But like Brian Hoyer last Sunday, he's going to be without T.Y. Hilton and Paris Campbell, his 2 best wide receivers. Do you guys happen to have the unfortunate happenstance to run into the picture of Paris Campbell's hand?
No.
Oh, God. It's gruesome. Mm. I really, really encourage you to not look at the picture of Paris Campbell's hand.
I'm looking right now. If you tell me not to do something, I'm going to do it.
Oh, it is not. It's not pretty. The Jaguars are allowing barely 1 touchdown per game to wide receivers, and much of those, or 1 passing touchdowns overall, much of those are going to tight ends. That's your glimmer of hope with Brissett, really, is his tight ends, Ebron and Doyle. They face a Jaguars defense that's allowed 5 tight end scores in the last 5 games. So I've got C grades on both Ebron and Doyle. Most weeks, Ebron only gets a couple of targets, but maybe turns that into a touchdown. Last week, that script flipped, but that was a Hoyer game, and God only knows. I still think together they represent the best chance for a touchdown, but you're in a kind of a coin flip between the two of them for which one may do better. We do care a little bit about Zach Pascal, although I think he got picked up in a bunch of leagues a couple weeks ago. They got dropped in all those leagues last week. Jaguars have only allowed two wide receiver scores since the opener. Think about that. Only two wide receivers have scored against the Jaguars since the opener.
Well, and they traded Jalen Ramsey like 4 weeks ago.
And that was Patrick Mahomes they faced in the opener, by the way.
Yeah, right. That's a pretty good excuse. Marlon Mack has received at least 18 carries in 5 straight games, and that volume will come in handy against Jacksonville. They've allowed at least 90 yards all 3 times a back has received at least 18 carries. So if he's got at least 18 carries in 5 straight, you hope he gets to the 90 yards. Mack has never scored. He has never topped 50 yards in 4 career games against the Jaguars, though. But let me mention this. Backup Jordan Wilkins may not play with an ankle injury. That could force even more use to Marlon Mack. And if he's out and you really need a dart throw in a bye week, Nyheim Hines, I think, becomes quasi-serviceable if Jordan Wilkins is, in fact, out for this game. Let's go to our next matchup, which is Dallas taking on Detroit. Matt. The Dallas Cowboys were unable to get Ezekiel Elliott going last week against the Vikings. I don't think they're going to have any trouble this week against Detroit.
I mean, is Zeke like, do you feel like Zeke's having a good year?
No, he's having a down year.
It seems bad, but that was the first game of the year last Sunday of the 9 games he's played in which he did not top 100 rushing yards or score in the game.
He just hasn't had the explosive games.
Yeah, it's just been like quietly consistent.
It's been 80 yards and a touchdown or 110 yards and no score. It hasn't all come together for Zeke.
You said Carolina's run defense was the worst in the league. I see you a Carolina and raise you a Detroit.
Okay.
They have allowed 120 rushing yards per game to the position over the last 5 weeks. Plus, opposing backs are averaging a rushing touchdown per game. Easy A for Zeke. Dak's an easy A as well. Dak's coming off 397 and 3 against the Vikings. Plus, the Lions have given up 15 touchdown passes in their last 5 games.
Unreal.
Including, and are you ready for this, Charge? Get your mouse ready. 3 last week to Happy Tromboneski. Yeah, he's back.
He's back.
Amari Cooper, he gets an easy A. Michael Gallup is a B. And Randall Cobb was my take-a-chance-on-me wide receiver. The Cowboys wide receiver group is leading the NFL in yards per game at 223 per game. Cooper misses practice or two every week with a nagging injury, but he plays every time. Gallup has 16 targets over his last 2, has reached pay dirt in each contest. Darius Slay is still injured, and he's been burned for 8.9 yards per target season.
He's not right.
You know, I think we have a sleigh ride button on there, too. The sleigh ride is very jolly right now. It's just like that. The Lions are bottom half in the league in receptions, yards, and touchdowns allowed to the wide receiver position. Jason Witten even gets a C in this grade. I don't really trust Witten overall as he hasn't scored since week 2. He could get off the schneid here, though, as the Lions have allowed a tight end touchdown in 4 straight games. I'm still worried that Blake Jarwin vultures that sucker in this one, though.
Yeah.
On the other side, I'm giving Jeff Driskel a C grade.
Really? All right.
Yeah.
Why?
I probably should have used him as my take a chance on me quarterback as a bonus one. Stafford has been ruled out again with a back injury. It's possible he may miss the rest of the season. Stafford's a sneaky sabotage drop, by the way. After this week, the Lions get Washington, who's surprisingly good against the pass. Chicago, Minnesota, they get Tampa in week 15. And then Denver in week 16. So there's only one good matchup the rest of the way for Detroit.
That Tampa matchup might be so good it's worth keeping him just for that start.
Driskel threw 46 times last week in Chicago. That's more attempts than Stafford had all season. He did run for a team-high 37 yards last week, too.
Man.
He's their best runner. Considering the disaster that is the Lions' backfield right now, he might do that again. He has 4.5 combine speed. So that's not terrible out of Jeff Driskel.
No. All right, but maybe he'll run his way to fantasy relevance.
He might. Ty Johnson looks like he's going to miss this week with a concussion, meaning Paul Perkins and J.D. McKissick will split reps. McKissick had 16 touches last week, including 6 receptions, only managed 45 yards. He's been burning me on Take a Chance on
me.
So
you got to be done with that.
I'm done with McKissick and Perkins. They're both on your bench. Galladay gets a C grade. Danny Amendola and Marvin Jones are on the bench. Driskel's targets were pretty even last week, 9 at Galladay, 8 at Amendola, 6 at Jones. But the Cowboys have been legit against wide receivers this year, though. They're top seven in receptions, yards, and touchdowns allowed to the position. And they've held every receiver they faced in the last three games under 50 yards. That includes Alshon, Golden Tate, and Steph Diggs. TJ Hockenson, though. He's my B grade in this game. Hockenson is my favorite cheap tight end play on Fanball this week at only $4,000. The Vikings tight ends combined for 9 catches, 48 yards, and 2 scores, and a 2-point conversion last week. Dallas has allowed the 3rd most receptions, 4th most yards, and 4th most touchdowns to the tight end position this season. I like TJ Hockenson in this one. He's kind of gone off in those easy matchup games so far this season.
All right, Houston takes on Baltimore, Brian. This is a tough matchup for, you know, you're used to starting a lot of Houston players. You just automatically put them in your lineup. This is a tough matchup against a Baltimore defense that seems to be improving almost on a weekly basis. What do you think about some of the star players, including Watson and Hopkins this week?
Why couldn't the NFL figure out how to get this game on Sunday Night Football, by the way, instead of the Bears?
Chicago Rams.
Which,
you know, I'll tell you why. Chicago's the third biggest city, and the Rams are the second biggest city.
Yeah, let's see how many of them actually watch the game. But anyway, over to this game. As you said, tough guys to sit on the Houston side, starting with DeAndre Hopkins. Going to give him an A, even though now that Jimmy Smith is back in the fold for Baltimore, that secondary is very scary. Over their last 5 games, only one wideout has topped 90 yards, and it was my boy, Auden Tate, who did it. Take a chance on me. Hopkins certainly has a chance to top 90 yards in any matchup. You're not benching him, no way. I am benching Will Fuller if he makes his return from a hamstring injury. It's looking sort of likely, but I need to see a full game from Fuller before you trust putting him in your lineup. And this is a very bad matchup. And I'm not starting Kenny Stills if Fuller were to sit. I'm also benching Darren Fells, even though he's tied for the tight end touchdown lead and has more combined touchdowns than Travis Kelce and Zach Ertz.
How about that?
But
no tight end has more touchdowns in the last 6 games than Darren Fells.
It's insane.
Wow.
But this is a bad matchup for Fells as well. Baltimore hasn't allowed a tight end to top 34 yards over the past 5 weeks, while also only surrendering 1 score to the position over that span. There are better options at tight end this week than Fells. Deshaun Watson, going to give him a B. Only Patty Mahomes has thrown for more than 1 touchdown, and this defense practically gets better every week. And Watson can run, of course, but Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson only totaled 31 yards on the ground against the Ravens. So just a B for Watson and a C for Carlos Hyde. There's been just 4 running backs who've reached double-digit carries against Baltimore and just 2 running backs who've topped 65 yards on the ground. So not a great matchup for Hyde. Over to Lamar Jackson. This is a great matchup. They're saying Jackson could score more fantasy points. He's on pace to score more fantasy points than Patrick Mahomes did last year.
Unbelievable.
Not throw for more touchdowns, of course.
Yeah,
factor in his rushing. It's absolutely insane. Non-rookie quarterbacks, and that's basically Gardner Minshew and Kyle Allen, are averaging 317 yards and 2.8 passing touchdowns against the Texans this year.
Amazing.
And Houston has not been tested on the ground by a quarterback yet either. Gardner Minshew might be the best rushing quarterback they faced, and he had 6 carries for 56 yards.
Really?
So, yeah.
Wow.
Buckle up, baby.
So, I mean, that's part of the beauty of Lamar Jackson, my number one ranked quarterback this week, is even if he doesn't run, he can pass you to a big game. And even if he doesn't pass, he can run you to a big game.
Just an absolute.
And he might do both.
Yep, just an absolute beast. Hollywood Brown, Marquise Brown, returned to practice on Friday, so it's looking like he'll play.
Let's hope so.
Great matchup for him, of course. Houston's secondary is awful. They are allowing 1.9 PPR points per target.
Man,
this season.
That's crazy. You don't even have to complete a pass to be a target.
Yeah. So for that reason, we have to mention Miles Boykin. I was going to give him Brown's B if Brown sits, but Brown looks like he's going to play. So I'm going to bench Boykin just because Baltimore doesn't pass a ton. But here's the angle on Willie Snead.
Really?
If Bradley Roby sits, like he did last week, that would put Cornell Armstrong back to man the slot. Cornell Armstrong has played 116 snaps in his short 2-year career. He's given up 12 of 14 completions for 174 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Dang.
So
Cornell Armstrong, you
Cornell
say?
Cornell Armstrong. So
all right.
If Bradley Roby is out, Willie Snead on Fanball, get to it. Real quickly, Mark Andrews, a B for him. Tough matchup for him. The Texans have surrendered just two scores to tight ends all season. Austin Hooper is the only tight end to top four catches against the Texans so far this year. And then Mark Ingram gets a B. Actually, I'm going to give him a hard C. Texans are tough against the run. Over their last five games, only Josh Jacobs has topped 50 rushing yards, and no running back has scored. Houston is also allowing the fifth least yards per carry over the last three games at 3.6.
All right, well done. Well done. Coming up next, let's answer three tough questions. You can play along. Try to go a perfect 3-0 on Fantasy Football Weekly. Football Weekly. I'm Paul Charchi and Fambol.com. My co-hosts, Brian Johnson, Matt Harrison. Boys, it is time for three tough questions.
Tough question number one.
Should David Johnson owners sabotage drop him? Now, as a reminder for people who have not heard this before, sabotage drop is, it's a drop, but it's a drop of a big name player that people are going to, your opponents will pick up and then try to find value in. But there's no value to be had, and they're just wasting roster spots and potentially wasting starting spots.
And to maximize the value on the sabotage drop, you drop him right before the fab run happens in your
league.
Drop
it before the fab run.
So people either have to use a lot of their fab budget, or they have to use their top waiver priority.
Correct. Doing it like on Friday,
yep.
It's too easy. You don't have to give anything up to go get him.
You're not doing it this
weekend. You want to do it like Sunday or Monday is the time that you drop David Johnson. If you were to decide to do that.
Tuesday at noon is when you drop him. That's exactly it.
You think Tuesday at noon?
Yeah, and precisely. I think that you should sabotage drop him.
Yeah, all right. Well, go ahead. Explain your rationale.
He's got a bye next week, so he's reason to believe that he's not going to get any points next week. Mm-hmm. Then he has matchups against the Rams. That's a bad matchup. Pittsburgh, that's a bad matchup. And then in week 15 and 16, just kind of middle of the pack matchups against Cleveland and then at Seattle, especially with Kenyon Drake kind of being anointed as now the starter there. And I don't know if you saw this going around on Twitter, the video of David Johnson just walking into defenders and looking like he has nothing left in the tank.
You mean David the Refrigerator Johnson?
He's taking over William Perry's name?
That's right.
Wow. Yeah, I think it's time to sabotage drop David Johnson. Get rid of him.
All right. Brian.
Yeah, I don't have much to add. Yeah, if you watched him play last week, he was the epitome of plotting for David Johnson. And on Friday, he was running with the twos when Kenyon Drake was running with the ones. They said he looked good in practice on Friday. That's because he was running with the twos. I could look good running against the twos in practice. And Matt alluded to the schedule. According to Fantasy Pros, it's the third hardest remaining schedule for a running back behind a not very good offensive line. So, yeah, drop him now. Well, not now. At the right time.
Yeah, drop him.
Tuesday at noon,
apparently. Yep. I think Monday works fine.
He might not have value. He's probably
still locked on Monday because the games aren't done for the week.
Yeah, well, that's probably
there
true.
We
well, but in many leagues, you can still drop a guy. It depends on your system, I guess. When Chase Edmonds comes back, David Johnson might be third in the pecking order.
This is true.
I mean, there's no guarantee he's just second in the pecking order. I agree with everything you guys said, but I want to get a bonus question. What about Dynasty and Empire Leaguers? Are you dropping David Johnson outright?
No. He's got enough value still that you just can't do that. You could trade him for something.
Can you, though?
Yeah.
This is the all-time low watermark for trading David Johnson.
I would probably go to anybody in the league and be like, I'll take a draft pick for David Johnson. Give me a first or a second next year. Any draft pick for David Johnson. Let's roll.
Remember the last time he was good? 2016. He's had one good season. One.
Ooh.
2016. There's a lot of people. This reminds me of the Josh Gordon thing as people were reliving 2013 with Josh Gordon. I think there's serious question about whether David Johnson ever has any value whatsoever for the remainder of his career.
Well, I definitely don't want him on my roster.
I don't either. I don't even want him on yours.
Tough question number two.
In many leagues, the trade deadline is this weekend. Should Saquon Barkley owners trade him now while they can? Brian.
Well, you should never sell a player at his lowest point. And I don't know if there's a point lower than coming off a 13 carry for 1 yard performance last week Saquon Barkley had against the Jets. So you're not going to get fair return for Barkley. And he's on a bye this week, which is no good. At Chicago next week, that's not very good either. Green Bay's a good matchup, but then at Philly's bad. But then, we'll say the Red Sea parts in the playoffs, weeks 15 and 16, Miami and at Washington. I don't care if you get a package of three or you'd have to be a monster package, but you're not going to get it. That's what she said. But sorry.
Is this a yes or a no?
I made myself laugh there. I didn't plan on doing that. I'm sorry. No, I'm not trading Saquon Barkley.
All right.
Brian alluded to the schedule, and I think that's the thing. In the last 4 weeks, three of the four matchups are really good, and I'm really not that afraid of him going up against Philly. He's going to be the top target in that game, and I think Philly can give up some points to pass-catching backs like Saquon. You'd really need to get an insane haul to get anything for Saquon right now, so no, I'm not trading him.
No, you're both wrong. Most leagues, Barkley owners are in bad shape. Between the ankle injury that knocked him out and then the middling performances since coming back, most Barkley owners are in deep trouble right now.
Okay.
They need to win now. They cannot afford the 0 points this week and the at Chicago next week.
Okay, that's fair.
What's more, that playoff schedule that seems so easy is suddenly turning to be really tricky. Philadelphia's been good against the run all year long. Miami is suddenly turning into a competent run defense, and Washington is actually like a top five run defense quietly. So it's not, it feels easy because these are floundering teams, but that's not an easy schedule. You need to get out of Saquon Barkley now. His name value carries a lot of cachet. You're going to get a Derrick Henry or a Leonard Fournette from some owner who's heading to the playoffs and thinks, and he sees Philly, Miami, Washington in the playoffs, and he's like, Saquon Barkley is going to lead me to the promised land. He may not be. You make that trade now.
Tough question number three.
Are you holding a roster spot for Matt Breida? Matt?
You know, this one caused a little bit of damage to my amygdala.
I could tell.
I hate it when my amygdala gets damaged because a visible bulge is known when that happens.
Is that your amygdala, or are you just happy to see me?
It might be both. The amygdala helps me respond to emotions, memories, and fear. And I'm very fearful for Matt Breida's remainder of the season. He is dinged up right now after this week, and he's been, I think, ruled out this week.
Yes.
He gets a good matchup against Green Bay next week, but who knows if he's healthy for next week's game, too. Mm-hmm. Then after that, it's awful. At Baltimore, at New Orleans, and the Rams in week 16 are all bad matchups. Atlanta's kind of a middle-of-the-road run defense. They're really bad against the pass, but mm-hmm. middle-of-the-road against the run. So with Breida splitting touches, no, I don't think that you can hold on to him.
Okay. Brian?
I'm actually holding him in two leagues, but those are Empire leagues, and we're talking redrafts here.
Okay. All right.
I won't add much to what Matt said, other than the Atlanta matchup, which is good, but that's a revenge game for Tevin Coleman. Tevin Coleman's going to get all the carries game.
Yeah, all right.
But I just want to throw out one Matt Breida stat. He's been clocked as the fastest ball carrier on a single play this season by Next Gen Stats at 22.3 miles per hour, faster than Cordarrelle Patterson, Brandon Wilson, Christian McCaffrey, Nick Chubb, and Mecole Hardman. He's so good, but no, you gotta drop him in redraft at this point.
That's the only thing I was gonna add. He's a really good player.
Yeah.
Hey, Matt Breida's really talented. It's just always constantly hurt. And
I can't put up with that and bad matchups, right?
Yeah. And all that, and Joe Staley out for several weeks.
Oh no,
with the mutilated finger for Joe Staley.
Did you see a picture of his finger?
No, that's I did
Google
not.
It.
Paris Campbell's hand. Don't do it. I'm telling you, it's a disaster. Hopefully, you went 3-0, and if you did, congratulations. The panel of experts did very well this week. Congratulations to you guys. You know, it's not going to go very well. Jets at Washington Redskins. Let's talk about it. You know, I just alluded to the fact that Washington was a tricky, good run defense. Listen to this. As Le'Veon Bell gets a C grade, Washington has allowed 3.9 yards per carry over their last three games. But they've also seen the most attempts, so they've actually given up the second most yards over that time. But it takes a lot of attempts to get there. The hope here is that Le'Veon Bell will get the attempts, but he's eclipsed 3.5 yards per carry just twice all year. He put up 1.9 yards per carry last week on a bad knee. I don't like him much here at all. It, just the C grade on Bell between the shockingly, surprisingly difficult matchup and the oddball usage and his general ineffectiveness. Let's go to the passing game where I've got C grades on a couple of guys, beginning with Sam Darnold. And I would love to endorse Sam Darnold in a seemingly easy matchup against Washington. But how can I when he has failed fantasy owners the past 2 weeks against similarly easy secondaries, the Dolphins and the Giants? Just one score in both of those games. And actually, you'll notice I said the word seemingly. The Redskins secondary has actually played much better of late. Over the past month of games, they've allowed just 203 yards and half a touchdown per game. So just the C grade on Sam Darnold. C grade on Robbie Anderson. He faces a Washington secondary with one excellent cornerback, Quentin Dunbar, and one lousy one, Josh Norman. Historically, Robbie Anderson runs on Quentin Dunbar's side more often. But it'll be on Norman's side enough to give him a C grade here. Anderson is fast. Josh Norman is among the slowest starting cornerbacks in the league. So maybe he's got a chance at a deep catch or two here. We'll try Robbie Anderson as a C grade. Let's go to the Washington side where I've got two guys with a starting grade, beginning with Adrian Peterson. In the four games under Bill Callahan, Peterson averaging 96 yards per game and 5 yards per carry. This is the best stretch of running since the middle of the 2015 season for Adrian Peterson. New York has allowed the fourth fewest rushing yards to running backs, though. They've been quietly great all year long. The Jets have held all running backs to 3 yards per carry on the season. So just the C grade for Adrian Peterson. What about Darius Geis, you may ask, who will be active for this game, and he will see the field. I think he gets used sparingly in this game, and the Redskins will slowly use him more and more over the course of the season so that by the end of the year, they know if Darius Geis is a guy they want to go with next year or if that's a spot they have to fill. But I don't think it starts here in his first game back. Well, and actually his first ever NFL game, as it would be, outside of game one where he got hurt.
He got some run this year.
Well, yeah, in game one.
Yeah, that was fun.
And then lastly, Terry McLaurin.
Terry McLaurin.
There he is. He needs to overcome the many, I think he will potentially overcome the many shortcomings of his rookie quarterback, Dwayne Haskins, but he faces a Jets secondary that over the last 3 weeks has allowed 10 receiver touchdowns over 3 weeks, which is great. And that was coming from Gardner Minshew and Ryan Fitzpatrick and Daniel Jones. Those are not great passers. McLaurin overwhelmingly plays from the left side of the field where he faces cornerback Arthur Maulet.
You made that name up.
An undrafted journeyman who has two career starts. So we will try Terry McLaurin with a C grade. He's been very quiet for a month, but I think this might be the opportunity.
I'm sorry. I was looking at mutilated hands. Did you grade Jamison Crowder?
I did not.
In the revenge game?
Thank you. Okay. I have a whole paragraph on him. Jamison Crowder has now notched at least 80 yards and a score in two straight games. He runs from the slot 75% of the time where he faces Redskins slot cornerback Fabian Moreau, who has allowed an 88% catch rate, but no scores. So I do think we're looking at a PPR-style game from Crowder, which is what you usually get in the 7-8 catch, 80-yard range. He gets a C grade.
Just out of sheer spite, he's going to get in the end zone, though, because he's mad at Washington.
He'd be mad at Washington.
Me-likey the revenge.
Yeah, do you know how much he got paid by the Jets? It was some obscene amount, so there really shouldn't be a lot of revenge, even if you want it.
What would a revenge sound bite be? Like the psycho?
That
sounds like a duck.
That's such a duck. It's the only thing I have in the soundbar that we don't normally use.
It's the revenge duck.
The revenge duck. I love it. The revenge duck. Let's see if we can turn that into some reoccurring bit on this show because we're stupid. It's every week you can play the Crush Charge Championship for free at fanball.com. When you assemble a better salary cap team than mine, you get a shot at this week's prize pool of $1,000. But more importantly, beating me is the only way to get an entry into our Week 17 championship, where you will battle me for the $10,000 prize pool. Fanball.com/charge. Fanball.com/charge. When we come back, more matchups to get to, including Arizona taking on San Francisco. What to expect from Jimmy Garoppolo with or without Emmanuel Sanders? We'll tell you when we come back to Fantasy Football Weekly. Weekly returns. We're diving back into matchups. But first, did you know you can play Super Flex Salary Cap at FanBall.com? If you love starting two quarterbacks or four tight ends, and nobody loves starting four tight ends.
I do.
Yeah, this is quite the year for that.
I like to start one and have them be 4,000. That's it.
Go to FanBall.com. Play our Salary Cap Super Flex DFS at FanBall.com. Okay, let's jump back into matchups. Arizona takes on San Francisco. Matt, we already talked about a lot of players we like at various levels here. Christian Kirk coming off a 3-touchdown game. You liked Kyler Murray, and you used him as your take a chance on me quarterback. What do you think about Christian Kirk coming off the big performance?
I gave him a B grade, mostly because the Cardinals sneakily have moved Christian Kirk. He's no longer a slot receiver. They've been pushing him to the perimeter more and more, where you can really gouge this Niners defense. DK Metcalf had 6 catches for 70 last week. Andy Isabella had the 88-yard touchdown catch the week before.
Yeah,
and John Ross had 112 and a score from the perimeter, too, earlier in the season. Kirk was finally healthy last week. It showed up in a big way with the 3 scores on 10 targets. I'm only giving Larry Fitzgerald a C because his average depth of target is only 5.3 yards. Compare that with Christian Kirk, who's at 14.5. It's almost 10 yards more. So Fitzgerald's just not getting deep enough to make a big difference. He only managed 4 catches for 38 in the meeting 2 weeks ago against the Niners. The running back situation is gross.
Okay.
Chase Edmonds is probably not going to play with the hamstring injury. Cliff Kingsbury indicated that Kenyon Drake will remain the lead back this week, although that
deservedly
meant
so.
A 60% to 40% snap count in favor of Kenyon Drake. So David Johnson's still eating into these touches here.
I don't know. Maybe that doesn't continue. Maybe they just pulled the plug on the whole David Johnson experiment.
I got to pull the plug on the whole running game this week. They're all on the bench. It's not enough for me to want to start either of these guys against the Niners defense that's done a great job against the run this year. They're top 10 in attempts, touchdowns, receptions, and receiving yards allowed to running backs. Mm-hmm. They've only allowed 87 rushing yards per game to the position. That's just not enough to split. On the other side, you mentioned Jimmy G coming out of the last segment. He gets an A grade. He's just a week removed from 317 and 4 scores against the Cardinals. 4 of the last 5 to face Arizona have topped 300. 3 of those 4 have thrown for 3 or more touchdowns. Unfortunately, we have some receiver issues. George Kittle is trending toward out again, which means Ross Dwelly, his backup, is kind of worth a C start because it's Arizona.
That's the only reason is because it's Arizona.
It's a weak try.
Right.
If you're in a 16-team league where you need to start a tight end, Dwelly had 7 targets last week against Seattle, and he gets Arizona this week. They've already allowed 10 touchdowns to the position this season.
Putting him in my 4 tight end lineup on Fanball Rate.
There it is. Emmanuel Sanders is also trending toward not playing. He didn't practice again today. He hasn't practiced at all this week with a rib injury. He did participate in the walkthrough, though. He is a true game-time decision. He gets a C grade if he plays. I'm giving Deebo Samuel a B grade. And a stat from Kate, I'm going to butcher her last name, Majuzik, FF Ball Blast on Twitter.
Okay.
That's her Twitter handle, FF Ball Blast. She's a good follow. You should follow her.
All right.
Patrick Peterson in coverage.
I don't think I'm going to follow her too closely. I'll
be honest. In 2019. He's allowing 14.9 yards per reception. That's a career high. 71 yards per game. That's a career high. 79.2 catch rate, career high. And a passer rating of 126.4 when targeted. Deebo led the team with 11 targets last week. He's also had 5 red zone targets in the last 3 weeks. Nobody's scared of Arizona, even Pat Pete anymore.
No.
Arizona has allowed a league-high 17 red zone receiving touchdowns this year. That's where Deebo comes into play. I think he's going to score for sure this week. So I like Deebo quite a bit.
What's the grade on Deebo Samuel?
B.
B grade.
A Bebo on Deebo.
All right.
Tevin Coleman gets a B grade. Raheem Mostert was my take a chance on me runner. Coleman obviously gets all the goal line work and is very involved in the passing game. As I mentioned, to take a chance on me, the Cards have been gouged by pass-catching backs as of late, allowing 9 receptions per game and about 200 yards and a score just the last 3 weeks. And those weren't backs that are known for their pass-catching prowess. That was Latavius Murray and Ronald Jones.
No.
So Tevin Coleman's got a good shot to put up a huge day in PPR.
Yeah, I'm closer to an A on Tevin Coleman.
You're probably right.
With Breida out.
I could be convinced.
All right. New England takes on Philadelphia. That's our next matchup here. Am I correct about that being our next? No, it's... Yeah, no, it
Let's
is not our next.
Cincinnati Cincy, Oakland.
Cincinnati and Oakland is our next matchup.
You already told us everybody to start on Cincy.
What about Joe Mixon is like the only starter you haven't mentioned from Cincinnati already in the Take a Chance on Me segment.
Oh, Tyler Boyd has something to say about that. But I'll start with Joe Mixon. Finally worked in a bell cow role last week, but that was because Gio Bernard left the game with an injury. Gio not on the injury report this week.
And that was because they were killing clock.
Yes.
In a 30-point deficit. They were just trying to leave.
Yes, they were.
Remember, I think it was the Cardinals that did that last year against Seattle. They were losing by like 28, and they just kept
ran the ball.
Get out of here.
Over with.
Yeah. Anyway, the Raiders have been tough against opposing running backs, but Chargers backs did rack up 181 combo yards and two touchdowns last Thursday night against Oakland. So I'll give Joe Mixon the C. Oakland has surrendered the seventh most running back receptions, and that is why Gio Bernard was my Take a Chance on Me running back. Tyler Boyd, everyone should take a chance on him this week. He gets an A. Opposing slot receivers are averaging 10-plus targets, 7-plus catches, and 88 yards per game, and have totaled 6 touchdowns in Oakland's 9 games.
You're going to start 5 Bengals in a lineup, aren't you? You're going to go Voltron stack in a fanball lineup.
Compliance won't allow it for whatever reason. They should certainly allow me giving my money away if I'm going to start all Bengals, but I am starting Auden Tate. I take a chance with my wide receiver. I'm not starting Tyler Eifert.
You got to draw the line somewhere.
Even though he scored last week, he only ran 12 pass routes. He's like decomposing before our eyes.
I can't wait for Tyler Eifert to score no other Bengals scores.
Well, he does. That means I hit on Ryan Lindley. chance on me quarterback. I just paired him with the wrong players, but I like Lindley in this one. It's all about chasing points and garbage time here. Over to the Raiders side, it's Josh Jacobs. And guess who else is in the room with him? It's the fantasy Fonzie A for Josh Jacobs. Over the last 4 games, enemy backs have totaled 6 touchdowns while averaging 145 combo yards against the Bengals, who are conceding 30 touches per game to the position on the season. A for Jacobs. A for Darren Waller. Since he sort of appears tough against tight ends on paper, but it's not hard to be tough on tight ends from Arizona, Jacksonville, or Pittsburgh when their only tight end is Nick Vinette, who just got off a plane via trade from Seattle. Mm. Let's take a look at what the Ravens tight ends have done to the Bengals. That's a fair comp, right? Raiders,
yeah.
Waller.
Yeah.
9 for 121, and then 12 for 151 and 2 against the Bengals last week. Waller is going to smash this week. It's been a quiet couple weeks for Waller, but he'll bounce back. Tyrell Williams is going to give him a B here just because he's touchdown dependent, and since he is only yielding the third fewest pass attempts per game.
Yeah, because everybody runs on them with such success.
Yep, and so just a B for Williams. I will give Hunter Renfrow a C. I was going to use him as my Take a Chance on Me receiver, but it's almost too easy. Per Sports Info Solutions, Cincinnati has given up a 119.5 passer rating on slot targets. And finally, Derek Carr, because of the volume concern, just going to give him a B here. He has a very safe floor in this matchup, though, and he's going to have a very clean pocket. Cincinnati is dead last in sacks and quarterback hits.
Dre Kirkpatrick going on IR on Friday. Yep. So that's it's another reason for some optimism with the Oakland passing attack. New England takes on Philadelphia, guys. This one is a little bit thorny. We'll work our way through it here. For Tom Brady, a B grade, because the Eagles secondary rolled into the bye week, having held Josh Allen and Mitch Trubisky to just 169 and 120. The return of Ronald Darby and Avante Maddox definitely helped that secondary. Meanwhile, and obviously Tom Brady's a lot better than Josh Allen and Mitch Trubisky, but over the previous month of games for Tom Brady, it wasn't that great. He was averaging one touchdown per game over the previous month of games. Almost as many interceptions as touchdowns, by the way, which Tom Brady never does. So just the B grade on Tom Brady here. Julian Edelman also with a B. Over the last 4 games, Edelman has commanded over 11 targets per game. He has scored twice per game over that last month. The Eagles secondary has given up 5 wide receiver scores in their last 4 games, but they haven't surrendered a touchdown from the slot since week 2. And that's why Edelman is a B and not an A. The only other startable Patriot I've got is Mohamed Sanu, fresh off his first Patriots touchdown, a game in which he notched the most targets and receptions in 81 games. So obviously getting a lot more action as a Patriot than he ever got as a Falcon. But this matchup is a little bit trickier. You know, I mentioned Brady with either has tossed zero or one touchdown in three of his last four games. Philadelphia has only allowed two passing touchdowns in their last two games. He'll get a matchup largely against Ronald Darby, a gambling corner. We'll see how that works out for Mohamed Sanu. You could start him in a pinch. Philip Dorsett on the bench. I'll be interested to see what N'Keal Harry does. We're going to talk about him a little bit more next segment as well. But this will be his first opportunity for playing time in this game. We're not going to start either him or Philip Dorsett here. Sony Walkman on the bench. He'll be running against a Philly defense that allows 3.1 yards per carry at home. Good for second fewest. He's averaging, Michelle, averaging just 3.4 yards per carry. He's failed to top 4 yards per carry in every game but two. And also, Rex Burkhead finally healthy. He could really carve into Sony Walkman's role. And as another aside, Michelle doesn't catch any passes. He doesn't have any speed. He doesn't have any footwork. He doesn't have any elusiveness, and he has no power. Other than that, he's a great running back. Let's go to the Eagles side. Starting grades on Jordan Howard. Get this, 42 carries in his last two games. That's the most Doug Peterson has ever given a single runner in back-to-back games to get to 42 carries. That's impressive on the season. And by the way, Sproles just went on IR.
I don't want to interrupt, but in the Jay Ajayi news
gross.
No, coming out on
mean
Friday.
Anything.
I know it does, but why?
Nothing.
I don't understand.
Why even sign him?
They're underusing Miles Sanders.
As it is, right.
Whatever.
Jay Ajayi, he's just got to be just for a warm body. I don't know why else you'd bring him in. On the season, New England, still technically the stingiest team against fantasy running backs, but they're giving up more lately. Over the last two games, they've allowed 115 or more rushing yards. The last three backs to face the Patriots have all averaged 4.5 yards per carry. I think Jordan Howard gets something done, and the best way to beat the Patriots is on the ground. Let's go to the passing game where Carson Wentz is on the bench. Your confidence in Wentz has got to be shaken. Over the last three games, he's averaging just 200 yards and one touchdown. DeSean Jackson dead. Alshon Jeffrey so slow and injured, and he drops passes. And here comes an elite secondary, New England. The average passing game against the Patriots, just 176 yards per game. No quarterback has topped 194 yards since Ben Roethlisberger in the opener. It's a disaster start here for Carson Wentz, who has to buck a lot of trends. As I already tipped my hand, I don't like Alshon Jeffrey here. Super slow, no separation, dropping balls, and he goes up against a secondary that's allowed one wide receiver score all year, so he's on the bench. Miles Sanders also on the bench. It's worth noting he's only seen three targets in each of the last four games. We think of him as sort of like the pass-catching back, but he's not even getting that much work there. Sanders has given us a 30-yard or more play in four of his last six games, and that's probably what you would need here, but the Patriots don't give up long games. So it's a bad matchup for him, too. He is also on the bench. The only other Eagle worth mentioning is Zach Ertz here. He finally broke out last week with season highs in targets, receptions, and yards. On paper, the Patriots have smothered opposing tight ends, holding them to 32 yards per game, but the competition's largely been bad, and Zach Ertz will be the best tight end they've faced all year, and they have given up a tight end touchdown in back-to-back games. So Zach Ertz with a B grade. If you're in a real pinch, you could consider Dallas Goedert, but I wouldn't go that low. I think you can probably find more help from other players. Our final topics are ahead when we provide you with three guys we believe will be hot waiver wire pickups next week. But you're going to pick them up this week. We'll jump into the time machine for premature speculation happening next. It is Fantasy Football Weekly. Segment of Fantasy Football Weekly, premature speculation, our favorite segment out of all of them, as we try to identify players you'll want to pick up this week that everybody else will be trying to pick up next week, but blammo and or they're already on your roster. That feels so good. Brian, who's your premature speculation player this week?
I'm going to go with a bit of a dynasty empire angle here and say you go grab Justin Jackson, the long forgotten running back of the Chargers, who looked great in the preseason, mm-hmm. and the Chargers like him a lot. I think he has the ability to be a starter, maybe even a bell cow. And let's not forget, Melvin Gordon, last year of his contract,
yeah.
not guaranteed to re-sign with L.A.
Correct.
Austin Eckler, free agent in 2020.
Yeah.
Say he doesn't come back.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, you're sitting on Justin Jackson, who is out there, like the deepest dynasty league.
Yeah, he's available.
And you might have a starting running back on your hands come August. Obviously, you have to go through the NFL draft and all that, and mm-hmm. Gordon. And mm-hmm. But if you're wallowing away in a dynasty league and you got an extra spot, go grab Justin Jackson.
I think it's a great idea. Let's see. I'm sold. Absolutely.
Thanks.
All right, Matt.
I have got A.J. Brown, who's topped 60 yards or scored in three of his last four games, which is basically since Ryan Tannehill took over. And then he's got this really awesome schedule in the fantasy playoffs, which includes Oakland, who's a bottom five wide receiver fantasy defense.
Yeah.
Houston in week 15, who's a bottom five wide receiver fantasy defense.
Okay.
And then New Orleans in week 16, which isn't awful. It's not great, but if he doesn't get Marshawn Lattimore in that game, if the matchups work that way,
yeah.
it's not a bad matchup either. So A.J. Brown is worth a pickup.
Drew Bennett could maybe even come back
late season blow up. Yeah. That might be nice. Oh, man, I'll never forget that year. That must have been like 2003.
No, it wasn't that long. It was more like 10, 11 with Billy Volek.
Yeah, Billy Volek.
I'll look it up.
All right, yeah, please do look that up. I'm gonna go 2003 for the big Drew Bennett.
That's too far back.
Miss Lendale White.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, he had a good. Yeah, I think he also had a really good end of season run one year.
Him and Ron Dane. Those guys. Yeah.
Some true story about 2 years ago. Guy comes up to me with a Ron Dane football card with a $5 bill. Tucked into it. It's in a little holder. And he says, I listen to Fantasy Football Weekly. You guys put me on to Ron Dane for my fantasy playoffs, and I rode him to the championship. So here's a tip. And he gave me the $5 and the card, and I've still got it. My premature speculation player is N'Keal Harry, as I just alluded to earlier. Remember, first round, taken in the first round for a team that desperately needs wide receiver help after jettisoning Josh Gordon. He's got the opportunity for immediate playing time. He's got Tom Brady throwing him the ball. He only needs to really overcome very little to make an impact, like Philip Dorsett, who they always seem to want to bench. So it turns out he's an impact outside receiver. They need an impact outside receiver. Maybe they're going to try N'Keal Harry. Usually I'm lukewarm on rookies getting their first starts, but the situation, the stars may align to get something out of N'Keal Harry the rest of the way.
Okay, you were right, Charge. 2004, time has flown.
Wow. Yes!
So the epic three-game stretch.
Yes, for Drew Bennett,
week 13, I won't go into opponents, doesn't matter. He had 3 for 124 and 3 touchdowns.
All right.
The following week, 12 for 233 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Yes.
The following week, 13 for 160 and 2 touchdowns.
And so then we all...
And then he disappeared.
Okay, so now put yourself in my shoes, right? So the next summer, I've got a magazine to put out with all my player ratings. What do you do about Drew Bennett coming off of that playoff run? Where do you rank him? Tell people what Drew Bennett did in the next, the month of the next season, if you would, Brian.
Do I even have to? It's not going to be good.
Nope, it's not going to be good. Because, we're like, oh, man.
Yep.
Drew Bennett looks so good, and that's what you remember, of course.
Well, he started with 3 for 79, so you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
he'll get going soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not awful, but he only had one touchdown in his first 10 games.
Exactly.
Topped 100 yards, 96 yards, 99, but
never the same.
Epic bust.
Yeah. Yeah, you get tricked. That's part of what fantasy football does to you a lot of the time. They just trick you outright. Let's go to the Sunday night game. It's Chicago taking on the Rams. Brian, they got 3 touchdown passes out of Happy Trombonski. 3 touchdown passes. It wasn't a great game, but it was, by his standards, a better game than we've had in the past. What do you think of the passing game for the Bears against the Rams?
Well, I was just going to say, despite the 3 touchdowns, you're benching Trubisky in this game. So I'm not going to go into it too much. Really, the only pass catcher worth mentioning is Allen Robinson, But the Rams have Jalen Ramsey, and Mitch Trubisky is the quarterback of the Bears. So I'm just going to give A-Rob a C based on name alone.
Mm-hmm. They both played for the Jaguars together a while ago. They're buds.
Oh, yeah, Jalen Ramsey. Yeah, right.
Ramsey
yeah.
in the league then?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they are buds. Anyway, David Montgomery is
coverage
not
buds.
Buds yeah. with his ankle after rolling it in practice on Wednesday. And no, that doesn't work at all.
No.
But he's going to be a game time decision going into this one. And it's not a good matchup. And he wet the bed against the Lions last week
yeah.
in a smash spot. The Rams have allowed just one rushing touchdown to a running back over their last five games. Only two running backs have topped 100 yards against them all year. The Rams, that is. It was Christian McCaffrey in week one. And then Chris Carson had 118 rushing yards in week five. But it took him 27 carries to get there. He almost can't bank on starting David Montgomery.
No. Between the game time decision and the matchup, I think he's a bench grade.
And no, you're not going to go grab Ryan Hell Nall, his backup.
yeah.
So I said only pass catcher worth mentioning was A-Rob. If Montgomery sits, hear me out.
All right.
Cordarrelle Patterson. Sneaky play. He's probably a better running back than Ryan Nall. He could be the running back for the Bears.
He could be starting running back.
I have a quote up on my wall at home. It says, "Don't get cute at running back, Brian Johnson."
he's a wide receiver.
Though. Oh, there we go.
Oh, okay. You're getting cute at wide receiver.
I would get cute with a wide receiver playing running back, but we'll see what happens with Montgomery. He'll probably play, but awful matchup. I'm going to say bench Montgomery outright, even if he plays. I almost want to say bench Todd Gurley outright, going to the other side.
I know.
Get this. Gurley has yet to top 20 opportunities in a game. That's carries plus targets. He hasn't even... It's disgusting.
I know. The last two weeks, 10 touches and 12 touches. That's it for Todd Gurley. And they never pass to him anymore. He was an elite pass catching back.
Well, how's this stat? The Rams running backs, I can barely read this, it's so bad, have totaled 5 catches over their last 4 games. Mm. 20 running back catches on the whole season.
Did Sean McVay lose his touch? Did he get shattered by Bill Belichick in that Super Bowl? Is it all over for the Wunderkind?
I think there's a chance that the Rams offensive line is awful.
Yeah.
Awful. And by the way, they just put their center on IR.
Yeah,
and their right tackle is going to miss this game. Ross Havenblobestein or whatever.
That's him. Yeah.
Havenblobestein.
I will give Gurley a C still. Chicago has been kind of bad against the run since losing Akeem Hicks. They've given up 7 rushing touchdowns in the last 5 games, but temper your expectations with Gurley. You know you need to do that already. Ronald Jones has like the same numbers as Todd Gurley this year. You can do like the player,
seriously?
Player A and player B comparison thing.
Wow, that's depressing.
It is very depressing. What else was depressing was Cooper Kupp's goose egg last week. Probably the most brutal goose egg of the fantasy football season so far.
Insert Mike Evans saying, what?
Yeah, well. At least Marshawn Lattimore was sort of an excuse for that. Like Jared Goff, Kupp does way better at home, where he averages an extra 30 yards per game on his career. Not a great spot on paper, though. The Bears have only allowed one wide receiver to score since week 3. In the last 3 weeks, 77 yards is the high watermark for an opposing wideout. So just a C for Kupp. I will give Robert Woods a C. Got 11 targets last week with Brandon Cooks on the sideline. Cooks definitely not playing this week or probably for the rest of the season. But again, not a great matchup. And Woods only has 3 red zone targets on the season. That is inexplicable, really.
And that explains his 0 receiving touchdowns.
Yep. Gerald Everett has caught some touchdowns, but they've really been on the road. He's the reversed Goff split guy. He's better on the road than at home. Has averaged 11 targets over his past 3 road games, but only 5 targets over his last 3 at home. He's been held scoreless and under 21 yards in 5 games, whether it's home or on the road. Most of them have been at home, but in his other 4 games, he's gone off. He's either scored, caught 8 passes, or topped 100 yards, but he's so boom or bust.
Yeah.
This is a bust scenario. Outside of Zach Ertz's big day against the Bears, Chicago hasn't allowed any other tight end to top 4 catches or 50 yards. So Everett, he gets a C just because tight end is such a wasteland, but it's not going to be a good day for him. And then Jared Goff, I know he's at home, but I got him on the bench. I'm aware of the splits, but Chicago is allowing just 1 passing touchdown per game on average, and only 1 quarterback has hit 300 passing yards. That was Case Keenum in garbage time, and like you said, Charge, the Rams without their starting center and right tackle. It's not all Goff's fault, but it's like 99.9%.
Goff droppable in redraft.
Down. That might be true. It might be true.
Yep.
All right, let's go to our Monday night game taking place in Mexico.
Ooh.
Let's vamonos to it.
Ciudad de Mexico. And our correspondent, Juan Juan.
No, it's Mateo.
Mateo Juan.
Yeah.
Juan Mateo.
I need some... Here we go. Yeah. Now I'm feeling it. This is the way to do it. The Kansas City Jefes at the Los Angeles Cargadores in Mexico. We'll start with Sombreado McCoy. That's Shady McCoy, who was a healthy scratch last week. He's still on your bench. Damian Williams, he gets the Bay Nota.
Aha. Uh-huh. Wait, that's not B+, is it?
No, Nota. Oh,
the grade.
Grade.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Yeah, you get an A, a Bay, or a say.
Yeah,
obviously. Williams had 24 of the 29 touches last week, including 5 receptions. Those 5 receptions are important, as the Chargers have allowed an average of 8 capturas and 60 receiving yards in their last 5 games to the running back positions. When you add in 3 receiving scores to opposing backs in that time, we're talking about a scoring fiesta for Damian Williams.
Mm.
Patricio Macasa. He gets an note.
That's very cute. Casa.
Yes.
Casa es Patricio. Never mind.
No. Mahomes Tobillo? Ankle injury? Looked like a non-factor last week as he threw for 446 passing yards. That's 446 in Tennessee. The Cargadores have been good against the pass, but vuelo superior quarterbacks such as Deshaun Watson and Ryan Tannehill have each topped 300 yards and thrown for multiple scores this year.
Mm-hmm.
Travis Kelce gets the Bay Nota. Kelce is not... Metió un gol against the Chargers since they moved to L.A. He has not scored a touchdown against the Chargers since they've become the L.A. Chargers.
Okay.
In fact, outside of Kansas City, his last two lines against the Chargers are 1 catch for 6 yards and 1 catch for 1 yard.
Yuck.
Yuck. The Chargers haven't allowed a tight end touchdown. In 7 games. Mm. Derwin James isn't due back for another couple weeks, but he was the guy who really shut down Kelce last year, so that's why Kelce still gets the Bay.
Bay.
Tyreek Colina. Hill. He gets the A Nota. Mikol Hombre Duro. Hardman.
Hardman, okay.
Yeah. And Sammy Watkins are on the banco. tough to knock a guy with 19 targets last week like Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
The only minus here is the matchup. No wide receiver has topped 70 yards or scored against the Chargers in the last 3 games. They've only allowed 1 wide receiver to top 100 yards on the year, and there's just not enough to go around outside of Hill, so the other guys are on the bench.
On the banco? Isn't that bank or is that banco?
That's banco.
Okay, my bad. Meemaw.
Felipe Rios on the other side.
Yes.
He gets the say, Nota. Rivers hasn't topped dos touchdown passes since week 1. He's only hit the 300-yard mark twice in his last 6 games. The bright side is that the Chiefs have allowed multiple scores to each of the past 3 quarterbacks they've faced. His favorite receiver is Cazador Henry. He gets an Anote. He's totaled at least 47 yards or a score in every game he's played this season, and the
Amazing.
Chiefs are bottom 10 in receptions and yards allowed to the tight end position. Hunter Henry, A great.
Yeah.
Miguel Williams, he's on the bench. I mostly just wanted him to call him Miguel.
Yeah.
He hasn't scored yet this season. Hasn't topped 6 targets or 4 receptions in any of the last 4 weeks. But Keenan Allen, he gets the Bay Nota in what should be a shootout. Allen has upside 10 or more targets in 3 of his last 4. Hasn't scored since week 3.
Hasn't scored in 7 weeks,
yeah.
Keenan Allen.
However, the Chiefs are only allowing 10 catches and 114 on average to the wide receiver position over the last 5 games. That's all got to go to Keenan Allen here.
Got to.
Melvin Gordon, he gets an Anote here.
Anote.
Gordon has reestablished himself as the conquistador of the Chargers' backfield with over 20 carries in back-to-back weeks. That resulted in 188 total yards and 3 touchdowns in those 2 weeks. Speaking of 188 yards, that's exactly how many Derrick Henry ran for last week against the Chiefs. Every top back to face the Chiefs in the last 3 weeks has topped 110 total yards, which brings into play Austin Eckler. He's the final guy in this matchup. He gets a say, Nota. He's still averaging 12 touches per game over the last 2 weeks since Gordon really took over.
Mm.
And it's worth noting, we're only a couple weeks removed from Aaron Jones going for 7 catches, 159 yards, and 2 touchdowns through the air.
Right.
So that's why Austin Eckler is still in play.
I think he is in play, very possibly.
Arriba, Austin Eckler.
Yes. Let's hope the Mexico City field doesn't end up destroying destroying anybody.
Well, they didn't turn him around and put him back in L.A. like they did last year.
That's right. It's a good sign. We've only got a few moments left in the show. Let me hit you with a couple of quick ones. Brian Johnson, can I drop Juju Smith-Schuster outright? He's in the concussion protocol. His status for next week, week 12, unknown.
Yeah, sabotage drop Juju. He's a headache you don't want to deal with. Odds are you're not in the playoffs with Juju on roster, but yeah, I would drop him.
Down the stretch, would you rather have Juju or Alexander Mattison?
I'd rather have the handcuff. I'd rather have the handcuff
exactly.
Alexander Mattison.
Yeah.
And that's
even if you don't have Dalvin Cook,
just in case something happens, yeah, he's your
Alexander
ticket.
Madison's a top 10
runner. Your ticket. Tony Pollard could be the same way, potentially.
Absolutely.
Maybe as another opportunity like that. All right, guys, nice job. Thank you for all your help as we get people ready for week number 11. And if you love this show, go to fanball.com/charts for my free player rankings, my free $1,000 weekly contest, our frantic auctions and podcasts and more. And many thanks to everybody who takes the time to rank and review the show on your podcasting platform of choice. Really appreciate all of your feedback, good, bad, and otherwise. And we look forward to bringing you a fresh Fantasy Football Weekly next week. Bye-bye. Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.